This is The Guardian.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. England hammer North Macedonia, and let's take a beat before saying it's only North Macedonia because it is a contractual obligation of all broadcasters to tell you that North Macedonia are no mugs. England were brilliant, that fourth goal. Trent Alexander-Arnold to Saka and then smashed into the top corner. A couple more for Kane. Nadim's here. Perhaps he'll tell us what he really thinks about him. Also, Ireland finally break down Gibraltar. Northern Ireland lose at home to Kazakhstan. In news we weren't expecting, Gary O'Neill gets sacked by Bournemouth. Very harsh or smart? Brutal ruthlessness. In more news we weren't expecting, Darren Moore leaves Sheffield Wednesday. There's the complex bit about Chelsea offloading four players to the Saudi League. All that plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Nader Manuaha, welcome.
Hello, sir.
Hello, Robin Cowan.
Good morning, Max.
And live from Samsun in Turkey, hello, Ben Fisher.
Hi, Matt.
Let's start then with England 7, North Macedonia 0. Alex says, will you please spend a couple of minutes talking about how good England are before you move on to North Macedonia? We will do that. Saka hat-trick, a brilliant performance, 12 points from four games in their group, 15 goals for, conceded one. Can we start, Robin, with that Saka goal? Trent over the top, Saka chests it and smashes it into the top corner. You and I on the WhatsApp group, we did let out involuntary noises on the WhatsApp group. That's taking it a step too far, but we both announced that we did yeah. Just sort of, I sat up straight.
Yeah, I did the, and my husband wasn't really paying attention. He was on his Switch, so that made him at least look at that goal for a couple of seconds. It was just glorious. And yeah, just the way he hit it so hard. It was just so satisfying, the way it curled away from the goalkeeper. I mean, you could probably point a few fingers about the defending, you know, it kind of bounced, didn't it, nicely, trapped it, and then... But, and it's just, he clearly is just such a popular player. I don't think, he's like a sort of proper national treasure, isn't he? But like, sort of, there are certain people who I haven't met anyone who has a bad word to say against. He's added to the list of Bob Mortimer,
yeah,
and Chris Kamara for me. Like, I don't know anyone who's got a bad word to say against any of those. And
Attenborough, yeah, just, Stelling.
Yeah, Attenborough, maybe the sort of anti-stop oil people might not like him, perhaps. I don't know, because he's a bit environmental. So we're getting into that now. But well, anyway,
but wouldn't they be pro that? I mean, wouldn't just stop oil like?
I mean, the
David
people who
Attenborough?
Don't like the stop oil people.
Oh, right.
Wouldn't like
okay,
him.
Right.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
get it. Right. So I'm just, people no, who just eat petrol are
exactly.
anti Attenborough. No, good point.
A good shout. No, I love that. And yeah, just generally, what a great performance from England. It looked like they were having a lot of fun, which is great to see, especially when, you know, we probably, a lot of international teams are like, I'd really, really wish I was on holiday right now. But it looked like they're having, like, yeah, super fun.
Yeah, that's the thing, Nadim, isn't it? It is easy to go, God, it's June and really football should have stopped by now. And I'm sure some of the players might feel that, but you didn't get that sense. And we've all seen qualifiers that are really boring. And this was actually a scintillating performance.
Yeah, it certainly was. I think was the first goal scored after 30 minutes. So for that first section, you know, you could see what North Macedonia were trying to do. And, you know, in fairness, they were doing it quite well. They were defensively solid. Didn't really offer that much in attack. But you can see they were going to try and make it difficult for England. But I'm going to lay all my cards out on the table here. I love watching England. I love watching this England team. I love the players within it. And recently I was reading Michael Richards' book, and I know there's no free ads, but shout out to Michael Richards for his book. And he's talking about when he was playing for England in like 2008, 2009, how the different sections within the group, like this is the Liverpool section, this is the Chelsea section, this is the United section. Obviously there was no City section back then, apart from just being around the back or something. But like with this group of players, you see Harry Kane celebrating with Saka. That's like Arsenal Spurs. You're seeing City United all celebrating together, and it feels like it's a proper group the way that it kind of needs to be and should be. And you can see they enjoy playing with each other, and they're so good as well that it's fun. You know, I've heard some people say you need to be more attacking, this, that, and the other, and have their complaints. But to be honest, I think those people are just miserable. Like, I enjoy watching this team. They're so dynamic, especially up top, that I really love watching them. And even like the idea of being more attacking. They started the game with Rhys Henderson and a right back in midfield. Like, usually someone will get sacked for that usually, but then instead it's like, oh, the masterstroke. It's so good. It's so clever. It's so this, it's so that. So yeah, I'm very much biased. I enjoy watching this England side more than anyone that I've seen in any years gone by. And I hope they win something next summer so that some people can just shut up for another 4 years. But that's my take anyway, Max.
And I wholeheartedly agree with you. Their starting 11 had a combined 590 appearances for the country, second most by an England starting 11 in any international, which is weird, Robin, because they seem really young to me.
Well, it's a good thing, isn't it? Because so clearly, yeah, they are young, but they've got that many caps. You know, you've got the likes of, obviously Kane, who's still, I mean, I guess he's starting to kind of...
No, he's not young now, is he?
He's not young, but he's still like, you know, absolutely at it. But they're all racking them up. Got Kyle Walker, who still doesn't look like he's slowing down at all. And yeah, I think that probably that stat made it look like, and it manifests itself on the field. They just looked so confident, professional, and knew exactly what they were doing. All of them and so confident. And I think what Naden was saying there, it shouldn't be underestimated. We must think back to pre-Southgate and the atmosphere, the toxicity around this England team. What he has done is incredible, absolutely incredible. They are likable. No one really likes them before that. And then they like each other. I just think that shouldn't be underestimated.
I think you're right. I mean, Barry isn't here to say, you know, well, you know, wait until the quarterfinals of the Euros or whatever. And we will have to get to that point. And the point is, if you're one of those people that Naden wants to shut up, you're in a much easier position, right? It's unlikely you'll win an international tournament. It's hard. There are other teams that do it. But while, you know, there isn't anyone there to say, unless Ben, you want to come in and say, this is nothing. They are mugs, North Macedonia. Then this positivity is great. And I find that cliques thing, it sounds so embarrassing. I just sort of never really quite believed that it would really be, you know, it's Man United at one table and Liverpool at another, because it just seems ludicrous that like adults would be like, oh, this is how we're going to do this then. All right, you'll be closer friends with some people than others in any squad or in any workplace. But that, was it really that real, Nathan?
Yeah, if Mike is going to put pen to paper on it, or rather, obviously Mike, you can't write, but if it was to come out in a book, then yeah, then it's real. And I'd heard about that in the past. And I think speaking with Johnny Lescott, he said there was a game, I think it was at Euros one time, and I think he scored... And I think it was from a Gerrard assist or something. And then when he came back in the summer, he was being criticised by some Everton fans saying, why did you celebrate with Steven Gerrard? You know, that was like the norm. And it feels so, so weird. But then yesterday, they play at Old Trafford. And you see a Liverpool player getting a round of applause walking off the pitch. And also, it's just like, I'm in a different world here. Yeah. And I know this sounds so positive and some people behind the scenes are being fuming off this. But I think the way that I perceive international football is that overall, you know, everyone knows it's very, very tough. And we never really know how well another team's doing because you're so focused on your own. Whereas domestically, you know, like if you lose to Brentford away or something, then you can understand Brentford have got a bit, but no one knows how good other teams are and how well they're doing. Most people probably couldn't tell you the last few games for Belgium, for Spain, for France, and so on and so forth. So they just think that like England, oh, they should be doing better, they should be doing better, but without any real context of what international football is actually like. But I think this team's capable of being successful. I think they're capable of winning a tournament next summer. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do it because, as I say, they're so dynamic. They're solid first. And then they've got so much like flair and attacking prowess up top that, you know, they're going to be in with a chance. And I wouldn't necessarily say that's always been the case throughout my time watching England anyway.
And Ben, a lot of the positivity, you obviously follow Wales for The Guardian, about the Welsh team when it's been successful, and we'll get onto it being less so now, is creating that sort of club mentality. And that's always said to be important when your players aren't perhaps as good, or you've got two or three really good players and the rest aren't. But actually, that's what England are doing with a whole squad of good players.
Yeah, I was going to say, just sort of alluding to what Nadim said, there's so much personality in this England team. I think that helps. Obviously, you know, it's really endearing. It's very likeable. I suppose, obviously, the job for Southgate and the challenge has always been, how does he flesh that out and how do we see that on the pitch? But at the moment, I think, you know, he's sort of nailing it, really. You know, and we're seeing it with newer players in the team. Eze, you know, even people like Aaron Ramsdale, big personalities, Maddison, probably leaving a couple out here. But Saka, it's just great to see players looking, feeling liberated. Obviously, there's a caveat in the sense that doing it against, you know, with respect at home to North Macedonia is different to those quarterfinals, etc., that you spoke about earlier. But I do think England is so vibrant, so alive, and as Nadim said, it's hard not to like this team. It's very, very likeable.
Yeah, and they blew them away. North Macedonia had two draws here before in 2002 and 2006, so I'm not too much of a comparison there. But, you know, they did knock Italy out of the World Cup, Robin, in that playoff. So this is, you know, they're no mugs, which I think Andros said, like, you have to say it, like, it's a great cliche, but they are no mugs.
I think that, you know, that, is it Brian's Gun Twitter account? That'll be the next one, won't it?
I think it might be.
So many people said they're no mugs, but it's true. They are, you know, they are one of the better international sides, and I don't think they even had an attempt, let alone on target. I think they actually didn't have an attempt on England's goal. That was certainly the case on kind of 60 Minutes, and they were, you know, we just absolutely battered.
Did you go to bed on 60 Minutes? I did.
I stayed up and watched all the goals, but I think they passed it back to John Pickford so he could have a touch, but I don't think he did anything. It was really impressive, and you've just got to, you know, obviously, you know, you want to beat France in that quarterfinal, but this is all good. And actually, you know, there was a lot of questions over Gareth Southgate and whether he should have stayed on. And since that quarterfinal, won every game and looked very, very good. And also, I would say this is without Jude Bellingham as well, who hopefully will be fit and have had a really good season at Real Madrid under his belt as well in the summer.
It was funny that you mentioned that, you know, that penalty. The seventh goal, and the commentator said, you know, never in doubt. And I look at every Harry Kane penalty. Oh, couldn't you have just done that? Couldn't you have just done that in the 84th minute? I just can't. He's
Why
moved
was
on.
It that one?
He's moved on. I haven't. Jed says we need Nadim to revisit his piece on Kane from a few weeks back. The world needs it. Please. He scored at least one in 21 of his last 22 major tournament qualifiers for England. Was that his 50th goal as captain? I think he scored. Bukayo Saka, the youngest player, first Arsenal player to score a hat-trick for England men's team since Theo Walcott, since that hat-trick against Croatia. Actually, Kane's ball to him for his hat-trick goal was a really good pass as well. And we again, obliged to talk about Trent Alexander-Arnold. That pass, Robin, was kind of the moment that was kind of like, oh, this is what Trent can do. Was it that brilliant a pass? Like, it was the right ball to play. But was it, you know, was that Glenn Hoddle? You know, it's not Kaká versus Liverpool, is it?
Well, he's got the technique, the vision, the awareness to do that. No, I think he's got all of that. Do I expect him to see him lining up, sort of starting the first game of the Euros in midfield? I don't know, because again, as I said, Bellingham's still to come back. Would you have a Bellingham, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Declan Rice? I mean, it's quite exciting, isn't it? But, I mean, I hate to be the sort of, to roll out the cliche, but I'd like to see him do it. You know, let's see how he does against, you know, a France or a Croatia, someone who's, you know, he's got a really, really top midfield. Because it's not in possession, no problem at all. He is absolutely exceptional. I think, you know, the criticism comes out of it, doesn't it? You know, for club and maybe country as well.
Yeah, the thing with Alexander-Arnold is, obviously, this sort of clamour for him to be in midfield, I don't know, maybe I've missed it, but it feels like it went away quite substantially. He was getting pelters for not being able to defend. And then it feels as though Southgate has kind of put him there, not out of nowhere, because I think he played in midfield as a kid, and there's always been that thought process that he maybe be better suited to midfield because of those deficiencies, if you want to call it that, defensively. But I think in a way, Southgate's almost made hard work for himself now, because it's worked so well, so kind of seamlessly. You know, he's got the number 10 shirt on and looks great and scoring goals and all the rest of it. It'd be interesting what England do go forward. Also, Liverpool. I mean, Klopp's going to obviously face all of the same questions. And at times, I think Liverpool and Klopp have been quite prickly about, you know, no, he doesn't need to move position. He's perfectly fine there. He's perfectly capable there. There's no issue with him defensively. So I think actually him going into midfield, and let's face it, it is a different position. It won't cause problems, but I think it's going to give them a headache they could probably just do without, because I think Klopp would have probably just left him where he was.
Pop John Stones in there as well, and then, you know, even more headaches.
Basically, the day Nadim of the centre-back is over, or the defender is over, isn't it? What did you ever want to just wander up in there?
No, absolutely not. No, it's minefield in there. I've got, listen, I prefer when the game's in front of me. Yeah. People coming from it, it's bad news.
Very hard. What do you make of Trent
then? No, I didn't really watch the game a couple of days ago, so I thought, let me tune into this one to see what it's like. And I thought he did have a good impact, but I thought he waned throughout the game. And I think I'm with Robin, where when your team's in the ascendancy, it's obviously very different to be playing in midfield like that. But when you're more on the back foot and you've got to dig in, then I think you need some of the sort of like nuances of the position, to understand the nuances of the position to really be effective with it. Because I was the same with John Stones a few months ago. Like he came into midfield and had a big impact. And then at some point, I thought he looked like a defender in midfield. But then as time passed, he then, you know, progressed on to that next stage. But lo and behold, all that stuff comes when they're in attack. So when you have to look at that other side of things, like you have to be a two-way player as such. But I think to go back to that, to the assist for Saka, it's amazing, you know. We sort of eulogize about people moving the ball around at the back, little, like, keep your foot on it, bring people in. But there's still some level of beauty to the channel ball. I think Trent's just, like, reunited the previous 50 years' worth of footballers. He spent all the time working on that. But it only ever works provided people are willing to test the line in behind. And Saka's very much going to do that. I think Rashford's very much going to do that as well. I think that's the element where, I don't know, I'd like to see Kane higher to potentially get on a couple of those as well. But maybe him coming short creates that opportunity. Mm-hmm. But it's a fantastic ball. And then the finish is just absolutely outrageous. And as a defender, if you think a team's always going to play short, you tend to be more aggressive. You're always trying to edge forward. But then when all of a sudden a ball like that goes flying over your head, as you're running back towards your goal, it's the one time when you don't know where anybody is. You don't know the positions of everyone else around you. So it's just absolute just chaos defending. And I think if England can maintain that, again, it's one of the reasons why I like them, because they can be so dynamic and they will use it. But Trent at midfield, I'm interested to see, as the guys were saying, what Liverpool do next season. Because I do see him as being able to do certain aspects of it. But can he do it all? I guess we'll have to find out.
So England top of Group C then, 4 from 4. Ukraine in third, 6 from 3. Italy have 3 from 2. Let's end part one there, and we'll begin part two with Wales defeat in Turkey. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. So Turkey 2, Wales 0, Ben. It was one of those games where all these things kept happening and you thought, well, you know, so Joe Morrell sent off 41 minutes. It was sort of an orange, could have been yellow, could have been red. And then they get this soft penalty, you know, they've already had a goal disallowed, Turkey, and then Danny Ward saves a penalty, and then they get another goal disallowed, the Turks. You sort of think, hang on, are Wales going to do something miraculous here? You sort of started to believe, and then obviously they didn't.
Yeah, it did feel like things kind of all conspired against them. Obviously, Turkey, sort of partisan crowd. I mean, when he made that challenge, literally the whole substitute bench, obviously one of those really long, sort of super long dugouts. All the subs poured onto the into the technical area. It was quite the sight. Yeah, and from there you're thinking, God, this is going to be a long night. And as you say, you kind of thought towards the end, you know, as the game went on before the first goal, you're thinking, are they going to somehow get a point here out of, you know, when at that point it would have been a really good point. And then it was really deflating, because obviously the first goal does go in when, you know, the legitimate one that counted. And then the second one's a bit of a worldie, really cuts in and puts in a top corner, albeit under not too much pressure. And then by the end, you're just like, two defeats in, what, 4 days? you know, Wales came into the camp sort of preaching they wanted 6 points, would have taken four, and they've ended up with none. And it's just funny how it can change, can't it? You know, it all flipped on Friday at home to Armenia. Really bad result, but also a just dire performance against a team, you know, let's face it, 71 places below them in the rankings. But strangely, you know, going into that game, things were, the outlook was quite rosy, quite positive. They got that unlikely point in Croatia. And then suddenly all of that's just gone to waste. And now you're looking at it and they're going to need a minor miracle to qualify automatically from the group. And, you know, Wales have had it so good the last few years, and suddenly it just feels a bit cold, and just you're questioning where it's going, really, which is quite sad.
Is it Rob Page out, or is it just, look, the players, you know, he's got to manage that transition from brilliant old players who couldn't move by the World Cup to players like Brennan Johnson, you know, young players who still need a bit of time?
Yeah, Page is definitely getting a lot of flack from fans. I don't think they think he's the man to take this team forward. Maybe they're right. I do think Rob Page deserves credit for the job he has done. However, it's one win in 12 games since they qualified for the World Cup. And if you actually look back at it, they've not played well convincingly. They're not convincing the game for quite a long time. Even I know those playoffs are high-pressure games, but it won't be a popular comment or thing to say, but you know, they were lucky, really, to, you know, the goal that obviously takes them to the World Cup was a slice of luck, obviously deflected free kick. And then from there, you're looking at it and they've played well in patches, but they've, you know, any game they have won, it's been a 1-0, like they beat Latvia in March 1-0. And they just need so much more. And at the moment, Page is not getting it out of them. As you say, Brennan Johnson is I think, the most exciting player in the squad. He went off injured yesterday with an ankle problem. And it's going to feel quite a long few months, I think, now between now and September. And I think fans have resigned to probably this campaign is done.
Any positives?
Yeah, I think there is excitement at some of these younger players, but I think you're asking a lot for them to just go and rip it up straight away. Jordan James, Luke Harris, Birmingham and Fulham respectively are, you know, highly rated, both 18. But like people like Johnson, I think can, you know, do more, can push on. But I think the issue for Wales is people like Dan James, even Nico Williams to a degree, Harry Wilson, all of these players we've talked about for quite a long time now who aren't kids, you know, oh yeah, they can progress, they can develop. And actually, it's okay as they're doing, that they're not doing enough. And obviously when in the Gareth Bale era, as it were, he could provide those big moments. He obviously carried the team. Ramsey's been way off it. And suddenly now it's just, you're looking at it and it's not that good a team. And I think it's catching up with him a bit.
Actually, how is Ramsey looking?
Not that great.
Because he was such a brilliant footballer, wasn't he?
Yeah, there was a couple of moments last night where he played a little pass and, you know, you kind of still think he has that ability to do things that frankly others can't do or don't even see. But he's getting bypassed in midfield. At one point yesterday, he took just a split second too long on the ball. Suddenly, Turkey, you've got the ball, they're on the counter, and Ramsey sort of, you know, left behind. I don't know if the game's a little bit too quick for him. Now that's what it looks like. Clearly undoubted ability. And I think also the problem is he's been given the captaincy, and ultimately he probably feels that responsibility and to a degree has that responsibility to provide those moments that Bale so often did down the years. And he's just not doing it. He doesn't seem able to do it.
Nadim, did you retire before the game got too quick for you? Or alternatively, was it always too quick for you?
Max, relax. relax.
Oh, very relaxed.
Relax, my friend. Relax. I playing at the back, it's a different game. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because as you get older, you start to read it better. And I remember when I was younger thinking, oh, I'll try and run as much as possible. And as you get older, you say, run as little as possible and have the biggest impact. So it doesn't really get ahead of you like that. And if people are quicker than you or whatever, you say, well, why am I going to race them? Just like drop off. I remember years ago playing against Cameron Jerome and Steve Bruce had him at Birmingham. We were at Sunderland. He said, like, just don't race him. Just drop off and then see what he has to do. So Cameron, really nice guy and all that, played with him a few years. He's desperate to run in behind. But when there's no behind, he's like standing there like, oh, what? what do I do now? So he has to go short. And I'm sure most of you don't remember many games where Cameron Jerome was coming short for 90 minutes. So, yeah, you just figure out a way to do it. And it's a shame for Wales that are in that spot. But I don't know. What do you think about this then, Ben, in regards to Wales? Is this who they are, like, who they've been for years, and Bale sort of like, excuse the pun, like bailed them out as such and sort of masked the issues that they have? Or is this just a bad version of Wales now who might not get better for a long while?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's probably the latter. That's what it looks like at the moment. I think, as I kind of tried to allude to a minute ago, I think there's a lot of players here who we thought, Joe Rodon's another example, who people have been kind of quietly talking up. Swansea did really well. We thought, okay, he gets the move to Tottenham, got the makings of a really good defender. But he's just not kicked on. And there's too many of those in this team. And part of that's probably not entirely their own fault. You know, they're not playing loads of minutes, some of these guys at club level. But they all look, you know, sort of five or six of them look short of it, if you like. And I think that's just not conducive to a successful team. And, you know, Danny Ward's another example, obviously got dropped by Leicester. I think the team is talented, and I think people are critical of Page for that it should be getting more out of them. But I don't know really if that's sort of blind faith in some of these players.
On the subject of how many games do I remember Cameron Jerome coming short in front of us, I think if you really pressed me, I couldn't remember one 90 minutes off Cameron Jerome. And I've obviously seen him play quite a lot. But to actually nail down definitely a playoff final for someone at some point. But, you know, I couldn't give you an actual football match, even though I would have seen many played. My apologies to Cameron Jerome. He's not the only player of which that is the case. So on the subject of dropping deep, there was one Cambridge game where we had so many injuries. Our assistant manager, I think it was called Paul Clark, played sweeper, and he was about 45, and he was literally on the 6-yard box. It was amazing. There is somewhere where it is too deep. It was absolutely sensational. He was sort of behind Lionel Perez, who was sort of on the halfway line for most of the game anyway. Anyway, the Republic of Ireland beat Gibraltar 3-0. There was one point, Robin, yesterday after about 90 minutes where there were no goals in any of the 7:45 kickoffs, and every part of me was, I'd be great if these all finished 0-0. And then the Republic was still 0-0 after about 50 minutes against Gibraltar, and you're like, oh man, Gibraltar. I mean, I only saw the highlights. It looked like actually they, you know, they were going to be all right. They scored eventually, beating Gibraltar. I mean, are we allowed to say they are mugs? I mean, I mean that sounds so insulting, but you know, they're not. They're not mugs. Is a better way of phrasing it, isn't it?
Gibraltar, obviously extremely limited for obvious reasons. I actually ended up watching their game against France, and they are like, what they can be is very organised. But eventually, that's pretty much all they've got. Got basically no attacking threats, so it will tell. It's interesting to compare like the sort of the other home nations, because obviously, so this was Evan Ferguson's first competitive goal. He's just a player that the Republic of Ireland are probably going to be relying on for a long time. But it's just that sort of big number nine, who's also got an excellent touch and sort of good awareness, doesn't come around that often for especially nations like that. So like Wales don't have anything like that, do they, at all? Also, just going back to that, I really liked John Brewer. I know you're not on Twitter at the moment, Max, but he said, I think Turkey could be dark horses.
Yes, good. He also made a good line yesterday about, you know, he'd be really good on Soccer Aid, which made me start thinking about Aaron Ramsey at that sort of pace of the game. It's absolutely nail.
I think that'd be really sad to see him at Soccer Aid.
Even Nadim's giving me a face there. That's sort of, that's too hard. That is tough. Gibraltar 201 in the FIFA rankings, tied with Somalia. So look, it doesn't mean a whole lot, but a win's a win. It's their first win of the campaign. Meanwhile, Northern Ireland got beaten by Kazakhstan. Did anyone see the Kazakhstan goal? That was great, wasn't it? Yes, Nadim, Amat Aimbetov. I don't know a lot about him, but a kind of goal where he ran past every Northern Irish defender without actually running past any of them.
Yeah, of course. You know me, Max. I sort of link with those type of goals. You know, after my one against Chelsea, I don't know if I've spoken about it before. I've done that before.
Yeah, but you actually took it past. I think yours required more technical skill, I think.
No, he didn't, Max. He didn't. Trust me, he did it from further out as well. And his was it the 88th minute or something like that to win the game? It's, you know, you can look at it from two perspectives. It's a great winner, but like one of the worst goals you can concede when you've got that many bodies around someone. You know, if you're playing at home as Northern Ireland, needing a win as well. But fair play to him. You know, he stepped up, and yeah, that's a tough loss again for Northern Ireland, I'd say. But this is where football goes, isn't it, Max? Yeah.
This was Son against Burnley came to mind as well. Like, you know, you admire it, but you also think, someone take him out, for God's sake. Yeah.
Where he picked the ball up. Yeah, if you go, this guy is going to score. You're like, well, there's no way he is going to score that goal. Anyway, Northern Ireland, second bottom of that group. Kazakhstan joint top, actually. They've had some good results, including beating Denmark, who are a bit flat at the moment. Scotland played Georgia tonight. We had some criticism of Barca Jim. I love you, Barca Jim. Scottish Gooner saying, how hard is it to find a Scottish pundit who actually watches the Scottish national team play? I think it's the second time we've had it on when we go, actually, I was at a gig, but I did get the alerts on my phone. Jim did say he did actually watch the whole game later. But no, you make a good point. It was a lazy booking. It is the summer. And we'll force Jim to actually do his job. Not that he's paid for this. Is he paid for this? Oh, we should probably give him something, shouldn't we? Anyway, Gary O'Neill sacked by Bournemouth. This is the first moment of not being on social media, where when George put it in the WhatsApp group, I was like, you what now? What's happened there? Bill Foley said Bournemouth could not achieve his ambitions with Gary O'Neill at the helm. He had 2 years on his contract after an extension was automatically triggered by avoiding relegation. They brought in Androni Iraola, who left Rayo Vallecano at the end of the season. It seems harsh, Ben, but is it sort of similar to that Nigel Atkins Pochettino at Southampton moment where everyone went, this is an outrage, and actually this guy's, I mean, time will tell, but my instant reaction is, God, that is rough on Gary O'Neill, but it might be the right thing.
Yeah, I've got exactly those words written here, Atkins Pochettino. It feels like that pivot, doesn't it? That was in the same statement as well 10 years ago. At least this time they allowed, you know, they let it sort of brew for 2.5 hours and then announced that the new manager. Yeah, it does feel, I'm surprised as well. I don't think anybody saw it coming, but Bournemouth have tracked Iraola since last autumn before giving O'Neill the job permanently. Obviously, he took caretaker charge after sacking Scott Parker. They looked at him before giving O'Neill the permanent job. Wasn't available, couldn't come. Obviously, Leeds tried their luck as well in February, and he wouldn't leave Vallecano then either. But now he's available, he's free to take charge. And I think Bournemouth feel he's a really exciting appointment. I think they think it's quite the coup.
Slightly sort of De Zerbi-like, do you think? That kind of
yes,
vibe?
Yes, and I do know Bournemouth looked at or tracked De Zerbi, certainly. Obviously, Brighton moved quicker and sort of beat them to the punch, but they really liked him. And in a way, I don't think it's a surprise that Bournemouth have gone down this route towards... I mean, the big thing that Bournemouth were stressing yesterday was that this is a style of play thing. We want this style of play. We think this is going to take us to a level that, frankly, we don't think Gary O'Neill can, which feels really harsh given the job he did. But as you say, if it turns out to be sort of more Pochettino-like, then they're going to look like geniuses, let's face it. And it's the same with Brighton, isn't it? When they sacked Houghton, you know, it was that, oh, this pragmatic guy who's just pretty safety first. Graham Potter comes in and does brilliantly. And then obviously since then, De Zerbi's even sort of removed that ceiling that we probably thought was at Brighton again and kicked Brighton on. So I think it's exciting for Bournemouth. I think the point we should make as well is that the fans are not in sort of pieces that Gary O'Neill has left, which may surprise a few people, but I think they maybe felt his work was done and they're definitely excited by this appointment. But it does feel quite ballsy, but I think in a way you have to credit Bournemouth as well for making this call. I think it would be easy to just sort of plough into next season, but if deep down this is what they're thinking, Bill Foley, we know, is an ambitious owner. You know, he said many times he's here to be sort of aggressive in upset rivals and lots of sort of zinging sound bites, and this is an example of it. Probably there's a few clubs in the league rivals who would think, oh, we quite fancy this guy. We like the look of him. And Bournemouth have got him, and we'll see how it plays out.
If you're Gary O'Neill, Nadim, you should be, surely you're sitting there when they call you in going, but hang on a second. Like, I came in after we lost 9-0 to Liverpool. I've kept us in the Premier League pretty comfortably. And you wanted me to, what, play tiki-taka at the same time? Like, you know, baby steps and all that.
Why now, if you know what I mean? Could he not have been sacked at the end of the season if that was going to be the way that they thought about it? Because what's changed in that time? You know, it's not like the players have been in and have been, you know, going through passing drills and discovered that all of a sudden Gary O'Neill's not the right guy for this third man run or something. So don't get the now. Obviously, they would have been chasing this other fella, but as I say, why didn't you just do it earlier then if that was an issue? And it's a tough position for him to be in because he's essentially now, till the day he dies, be known as a Premier League manager. You know, he's had 37 games, or he's had however many games. He kept the team up and a team that most people fancied to go down. I think they were the ones which felt like they were dead certs after he came in. So he's done what appears to be a good job. And you can have owners that are ambitious and so on, but Iraola, he could do well. It might not do. You can have a style of play that doesn't suit the players that you have. Because have a style of play that doesn't really match up to the other teams. Because are you really going to all of a sudden start out playing everybody that's in and around you in the Premiership? Probably not, but it could be all right. But again, to take a step back, I think we need to remember moments like this when in 10 years' time we were doing a trivia quiz saying, what was the last English manager to win a Premier League? And the answer is, well, we decided that we'd rather go for style of play, and the style of play is only available outside of these shores. You know, that's the...
It's a weird quiz, this. I can't wait for it. 2033, the Nader Manuaha trivia quiz.
I think the last English manager to win a top division, was it Howard Wilkinson or something like that?
Yeah.
And this was the year before the Premier League started. But then it'd be like, oh, there's no English talent, there's no English this, there's no English that. But then we're watching with our own eyes how football is changing on the field. But surely, like, some English managers could have a chance to potentially try and do that. It's just a case of you're from the south, or whatever. We need someone that's like clearly been in the Basque region for a while, because otherwise they don't really feel it. You know what I mean? But good luck to them. It's a shame for him because Gary O'Neill is a former teammate of mine. So yeah, my allegiance is very much with him, and I thought he did do a good job. But they clearly have a plan in play. But we'll have to see, because the Premier League is very, very different to La Liga, isn't it?
Robin, are you more surprised about Gary O'Neill or Darren Moore, who's left Sheffield Wednesday by mutual consent after winning that playoff final against Bournemouth, after an amazing comeback against Peterborough in the semi-finals? Both parties believe that now is the right time we go our separate ways, said the chairman, Dejan Chanziri. In the football industry, journey's come to an end, and now is that time, which we both agree. It's all very mutual, this, Robin, isn't it? To make me feel like it might not be as mutual as this mutually agreed statement suggests.
Yeah, I do wonder how mutual it really was. But yeah, it's quite, I think for Bournemouth, they've lucked out here, because you think they were like, you think this is mad? Look what's happening over there, Sheffield Wednesday. It's interesting what Ben said about, you know, it's not, the decision clearly from Bournemouth is not that unpopular. Obviously, we'll see how the new guy gets on. But I do wonder, and this is a question, I guess, how unpopular is this going to be? And if it's very unpopular, God, they've put some pressure on themselves to get the next appointment right. And yeah, and that, this is the other question. How mutual is it? Because if it is genuinely, I mean, they always say it is. It never is. If it is genuinely like maybe, you know, Darren Moore wasn't convinced with what they were going to do in the summer for him, and he was like, okay, maybe I'll leave on a high, then that sort of, I guess, might make a bit of sense. But like, I just don't get it. I mean, that was... They had a record number of points and not go up automatically. They then did that ridiculous turnaround. That was, again, a record-breaking turnaround in a playoff semi-final against Peterborough. He is widely recognised as a, not just a good coach, and that's important, a very, very good coach, but just also a genuinely nice guy who the players really like. You know, remember that social media video of Barry Bannon? So, yeah, this one really did surprise me. And I don't know if anything will come out and we'll find out what happened, but it all seems a bit odd from the outside, at least.
I was just going to say, I was there when the playoff final, when Sheffield Wednesday obviously made it up, got up very, very late on. Don't get me wrong, I didn't see this coming, but I'm not entirely surprised given some of the noises Darren Moore was making, you know, in the aftermath of that victory, had this sort of marathon press conference when he was being asked sort of very tedious questions about Lee Gregory and, you know, just very boring things. But David Downes, his head of recruitment, is left for Blackpool in the last couple of weeks. Darren Moore was obviously inevitably asked questions after winning that playoff final about, you know, how do we attack the championship? How do we make sure we're in a better place? Blah, blah. And I think he knew they needed big changes, lots of investment, reassurance of certain things, players out of contract. And I don't think, even at that point, I think he probably knew what was coming down the track. I think that club as well is a little bit fractured still. I mean, they almost got rid of Darren Moore in the build-up, you know, in the weeks before that playoff final. Obviously, it was a poor run. I don't think it'd be the worst thing. They were unconvincing. I know it was a great comeback, but they were unconvincing on numerous occasions towards the end of that season, last season. I don't think it's been the most happiest of marriages for a little while, so I don't think it's the biggest surprise, actually.
Just two things, Max. I need to get ahead of this because I can see myself getting the outs already on social media. I wasn't saying Gary O'Neill was going to win the Premier League next season, just so we're clear. All right.
Well, that's a sort of hypothetical trivia quiz, which is much harder to... It's much harder, isn't it?
Anyone that's listened to this point here, like, please delete that tweet you're about to love. Yeah. But the other side, like, the managers losing their jobs to, like, in the last couple of days, especially the Darren Moore one, their preseason will start next week. Mm. Like, surely a manager, and in that time, he's made decisions about players who are going to stay, players who are going to have extensions and so on and so forth. Why would you give somebody the keys to essentially this near future, but then the next person that comes in, all of a sudden had no say in terms of who left? Because you never know. You never know who you like, who you don't like, where you want your preseason to be, how you want it to look, and so on. But these things don't just happen overnight. Don't just like gather the night before and say, right, this is what we're going to do in preseason for the next 6 weeks. It's like, why now? Like, fortunately, I genuinely do not get it. And they might have been issues, but he would have been the guy that's planning preseason from like before the season even finished last year. If we go up, we'll do this. If we stay where we are, we'll do that. And then, yeah, literally 7 days or whatever before they're back in, like, bang, we'll just start fresh again. I really don't understand that.
Before we end part two, Ben, you wanted to pay tribute to the Guardian journalist Jeremy Alexander, who passed away at the age of 81, had been at the paper for 57 years.
Yeah, just very quickly, people on the desk in our place would have known him a lot longer than myself, but just an amazing guy, very encouraging to myself and lots of us. Brilliant writer, very sort of meticulous sub. I dug out an email actually the other a few days ago that he'd sent me after I did a piece with Steve Evans, the Stevenage manager, and he just said, "Lovely piece, but just want to be sure that he were in Rutland, Jeremy." And I replied and said, "Yeah, it was in Rutland, Jeremy." He said, "It was just that neither Stevenage nor Stamford is in Rutland, so worth a check." And I just thought that. Sort of epitomised him, really. That sort of just encapsulated all sides of him. Just a great guy, and will be terribly missed by everybody at our place.
Yeah, we send his best wishes just there. Obviously, that sort of attention to detail, and we can't even get a Scotsman who's seen Scotland play. So, you know, that's what Football Weekly needed. But our best wishes, of course, to the family and friends of Jeremy Alexander, who's passed away at the age of 81. We'll be back in a sec. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Alexander says, time to start asking where the money comes from for Chelsea and the tie-in with Saudi Arabia. Maybe 10 minutes of Philippe that goes straight on the cutting room floor. So yeah, Mendy, Koulibaly and Ziyech, along with Kante, looking to be going to the Saudi League. Al Nasser for Hakim Ziyech, Al Hilal for Koulibaly, Al Ahly for Mendy, Al Ittihad for Kante. It'll be interesting as time goes by that we actually sort of know who these sides are and a bit more about them. Those four Saudi clubs are now owned by the Public Investment Fund, obviously owned Newcastle United and owned Gulf now. The Public Investment Fund, according to CBS Soccer, reportedly have billions of pounds of assets managed by Clear Lake Capital, who are the majority shareholders at Stamford Bridge. Todd Bowley was apparently in Saudi Arabia earlier this month, greasing the wheels that brought salvation in a summer that had potential disaster for Chelsea. They need to offload a lot of players. It's complicated, Robin. It doesn't mean that PIF and Saudi Arabia own Chelsea. I mean, that is, you know, there is a clear demarcation between that and Newcastle United. But it does seem, you're in a fortunate position if you've got somewhere you can sell players for a lot of money who might be amenable to it.
It just seems very murky. And yeah, it's, someone pointed out, this is like, you know, they're being bailed out for bad decision making and the potential sort of sanctions from FFP. And they've just managed that Saudi Arabia, this, because they're offering so much money, they're going to be able to balance the books. And it just seems a bit, I mean, it's a lot going into this. I don't want to get in trouble, but it kind of, you know, it's all... Yeah, this just doesn't, it just doesn't sit right.
Two games were abandoned on Monday following allegations of racial abuse. New Zealand refused to play the second half against Qatar after saying Michael Boxall was abused by a Qatari player during the first half. New Zealand Football tweeted out, Michael Boxall was racially abused during the first half of the game by a Qatari player. No official action was taken, so the team have agreed not to come out for the second half of the game. Meanwhile, the Republic of Ireland under-21's friendly with Kuwait also ended early after an alleged racist remark. The FAI said a Kuwait under 22 player made the mark to Republic of Ireland substitute. Both matches were taking place in Austria, coincidentally. The FAI said it will report the incident during the Kuwait match to FIFA and UEFA. Last week, Gianni Infantino said Real Madrid's Vinicius Jr. will lead a special anti-racism committee made up of players, which will suggest stricter punishments for discriminatory behaviour in football. Gianni loves a photo op, doesn't he? He was having lots of nice sitting down, smiling pictures with Vinicius Jr. We await any meaningful change with skepticism, I would say. And I don't know if, like, is obviously Vinicius Jr., like, and Johnny Lee was saying, you know, actually what he's done and, you know, could be the most important player of the year for off the pitch reasons as well as being a brilliant footballer. But it shouldn't be incumbent on him to make these decisions or to be in a, I mean, maybe he appreciates being asked what he thinks should happen. As a player, Nadim, you know, and as a black guy, I'd ask you, what do you think?
I think it depends on the player because right. Some people are very scared to speak up because they know that from when you start, like it never really ends because you'll become the representative that will speak on this issue going forward and represent thousands of people forever. And that's a lot on people's shoulders because as well, there's the other side where you just want to play football. But he knows the issues. But then he also understands that like his perspective will be different to say someone like that's playing in a different place who hasn't necessarily had the same experience. So I think it's tough. I think being the spokesperson for a lot of people can be very, very tough, especially in a place where there isn't that much empathy in the grand scheme of things. And you can say it, but a lot of people won't believe it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And when you say it matters the most to you, someone say, well, it's football, just get over it. Like some people will still be disgusted that those two games got postponed yesterday. They'll be thinking, well, just play the game. But then the perspective of the one who receives the abuse is that how can you play the game when this is happening? So I think there is a lot on Vinicius Jr.'s shoulders. I hope he's ready for it and really understands what it means. Because even like, I'll get this out there. Every time, and this isn't for this podcast, but I'm going to put it out there. Every time there's some element of racial abuse that happens within football, my phone starts blowing up with people.
Sure.
Get two minutes for me to talk about it. And I just like, you know, I can talk about other things as well. Yeah. But at this stage, there should be other people that are capable of talking about it who don't necessarily need to be me, but still I do it because I understand the value of it. But then like, if you keep having to do something over and over, maybe things aren't changing the way that people believe it.
And actually something we're really conscious about is not, you know, you have people on, you have a diverse podcast, right? So that these conversations can happen regardless of who's on. And most of the time, it won't just be four white men talking about it. You know, that's the key, right? And if you...
But listen, it's weird. Like, how am I the specialist for, like, current Premier League players who get racially abused after missing a penalty? Like, that's how we go. Oh, everyone's got my number again. Right, let's And I usually come just after John Barnes, who said the exact opposite thing, and I'm going to say the other thing. And then we call it a balanced argument. Like, yeah. Oh, come on. Like, what are we doing?
Let's talk about Manchester United women's team quickly, Robin. What's happened there?
Well, they've lost their two best players for free. Onabatcha has gone back to Barcelona. Alessia Russo has announced that she's not going to be signing any deal with Manchester United. Widely reported she's going to be joining Arsenal. Now, I mean, just to kind of maybe not dig out Manchester United too much, Batcha's gone back to where she started her career and probably where her family is. And Russo is from London. So it might be because of that. But from what's been reported is that in the financial package that they were offered was pretty much the same as what they will be getting from their new clubs. And it was just that Manchester United took way too long over it, which if that is the case, that's pretty damning. Mm. Also, there's some breaking news that actually Kelly Chambers, who's been at Reading and the Reading coach for about 20 years, has left. She's about to give birth to her second child. So hopefully she'll get a proper maternity leave this time. We discussed this on the Guardian Women's Football Weekly because I think she took about maybe a couple of weeks after her first one. I know, it's mad. Yeah. So she's left. They've just been relegated. And there's a couple of vacancies actually in the WSL. Spurs and West Ham are still looking for new head coaches, and she will be definitely top of the list once she is ready. But I know, Ben, I mean, Reading as a football club are in an absolute mess, aren't they? I've heard that two former Oxford United managers have turned down the chance to manage them. I think in, reportedly Chris Wilder and Carl Robinson. So that whole club, Reading, who are the men's team are in League One and the women's team were relegated as well to the Championship, not in a good way at the moment.
Yeah, that's a shambles, I think, really, isn't it, Robin? It's and obviously the women have gone to part-time, haven't they? And it's obviously... That's never a good thing. The Reading CEO's said about, you know, cost cutting and stuff. It's it's all a mess. And unfortunately, I mean, they were in the Championship playoff final, 6 years ago? One game from the Premier League, and since then it's been quite the decline all round.
Oh, look, that'll do for today. Appreciate your time as always. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
Safe flight home from Turkey. Cheers, Nadim.
Cheers, Max.
Thank you, Robin.
Thanks, Max.
Football Weekly was produced by George Cooper. The executive producer is Max Sanderson. We've got a couple of specials, The Life and Times of Troy Townsend and Nikki Bandini, which were both fascinating conversations. We'll be out in the next couple of weeks and we'll be back after that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.